right, welcome back, Maggie and Perloff show. Dallas Cowboys give CeeDee Lamb $34 million per year. And I just think it's interesting. That number made nobody on planet Earth blink. That's just what wide receivers get now. It is an era of wide receivers, which I think is the reason we want to do this, our weekly old school versus new school. Let's focus on the pass catcher.
It's Maggie and Perloff's old school, new school.
All right, Maggie. The issue is wide receivers. Which direction do you want to go? I will cede the floor.
All right. Well, first, let's let you know a little of what we mean by old school versus new school. The old school wide receivers, it sounded a little like this.
Firing downfield, Swan going after covered, and it's juggled. Swan catches another circus catch. The ball bounced into the air. Swan lying on his back, cut the ball in circus fashion.
Aaron Ball in deep, and it's Jerry Rice. And Jerry Rice works the stumble, scores the 125th touchdown of his career.
Got a man margin. Oh, did he drag his feet magnificently. But that was vintage Steve Largent.
And the pass is caught by Moss. Touchdown. He is absolutely amazing.
All right, there's a little of a taste of what the old school guys sounded like. It's Jerry Rice, obviously. You heard Steve Largent in there. So many amazing old school guys who basically, how we're breaking this up is receivers who played before they really changed the rules of how much you could, you know, how physical you could get off the line of scrimmage. So here's how some of the new school receivers sound like.
Jump ball, touchdown. Megatron is in for the touchdown, Calvin Johnson.
Just going to throw it deep for Jones, double coverage. Oh, what a catch! Touchdown!
Down the middle. It's Hill in the open. Cuts it upfield. He might be gone. He is.
He's given time. He wants Jefferson. Climbs the ladder. Oh, my goodness. Justin Jefferson pulled it in. The catch of his life.
There you go. So the old school, new school today. Old school wide receivers versus new. And again, Pearl, I think we're basically delineating this between the old rules and the new rules. Not just when they played, which it obviously plays into this too, but just how different it was for the old school wide receivers to have to navigate defenses versus the new school. And for that reason, I'll take the old school guys, because the degree of difficulty of just getting off the line of scrimmage was so much harder back then than it is today. The NFL wants this wide open passing attack, which is fun to watch. But if you want to tell me who were the guys who were really, really had to get after it, be physical, give me the old school guys.
All right. Well, I understand your argument. And yeah, I do give credit to all those guys. I think the big difference is, and it's a little before, like, gloves changed the game completely. Now everybody can make one-handed catches. I think you could delineate, actually, if you wanted to, you could go with the rule change, but you could also go when Odell Beckham made that one-handed catch, that changed everything. Because now, basically, no young receiver wants to catch with one hand. But there is no doubt that is a position that has remarkably improved. There are probably 30 receivers in the NFL who would have been top three throughout the last 30 years. I mean, the guys, there's a reason. Six out of eight highest paid non-quarterbacks are receivers because they are coming up completely differently now. They're all playing 7-on-7 from age 8 on, being able to catch the ball. Not only do you have to catch the ball, you have to catch everything. And you have to catch the ball coming a million miles an hour because the quarterbacks are better and you have more athletic cornerbacks. There are so many. I'm going through this list of who's in the league now. Tyreek Hill obviously would have been the best receiver any era. CeeDee Lamb would have been right there behind Calvin Johnson, Randy Moss, and T.O. You know, A.J. Brown would have been awesome. There's so many guys who are better just now. Ja'Marr Chase, like these guys, there's 20 of them. There used to be one or two. You were so top heavy back in the day with Jerry Rice and Randy Moss. I just think that nowadays it's the spread outness of it. There's just so many good ones. Every year, five new first-round wide receivers enter the league, and they're amazing. Look at this year's draft. Marvin Harrison was number four. There was no Marvin Harrisons coming to the league in 1995. Marvin Harrison is a ridiculous prospect. He runs a 4.4. He's 6'4", and can catch everything. Then he might be the second-best receiver in this class. This wasn't even a wide receiver draft, Maggie. It was not considered a great wide receiver draft. Every year, there are incredibly talented players coming in. It's because of the way that football players are developing. Wide receivers today are so much better.
Well, first of all, I'll take Marvin Harrison Sr., who was an incredible wide receiver. And Marvin Harrison Jr., I think he's going to be good, but hasn't done anything yet. And Randy Moss's rookie year, was it 97?
98.
Yep. Amazing. I mean, let's not pretend like guys can only come in and have an impact right away now, because the rules have changed, and the rules kind of changed around, what was it, 2005 or so?
Right.
2004.
2004, 2005, right.
Right. This is where you couldn't start touching guys. And I've actually had the pleasure, not to name drop, but I've had the pleasure of talking to Jerry Rice about this. And he said his numbers, you can't even calculate. And no one's going to catch Jerry Rice. I don't think so. Maybe if they keep adding more games to the schedule. But what his numbers would have been like in this era, you can't even measure it. And the fact of the matter is, I think that just shows you, even if it is a little more top-heavy back in that day, if we're going elite versus the elite, then I think the old-school guys are not only just as good, but deserve even more credit, because the game is just so wide open now. You have so many more targets. And, you know, here's the other thing about the wide receivers. Like, are we in this golden era of wide receivers because the pay is so awesome? Mm-hmm. Perloff, you said it. Wide receiver's the new running back. This is a bubble that's going to burst. And I think this is why you are seeing dudes holding out, holding in, making sure they get their money now, because I think in 5 years, we're not talking about $35 million for receivers. I think it goes the other way, and we start bringing those salaries down on these wideouts.
By the way, can you give me anyone besides Randy Moss and Jerry Rice? It feels like I'm hearing a lot of Rice and Moss.
Okay.
Rice and Moss. And by the way, Moss.
Chris Carter, Steve Largent. Can I give
Steve
you Sterling Sharp?
Steve Largent would be like the, I mean, I don't mean to be a cliche, but he'd be catching 85 balls for the Patriots right now. What is Steve Largent?
Steve Largent might be the second or third greatest wide receiver. He's awesome. Steve Largent was amazing.
Steve Largent is a slot guy in today's NFL. There's no
doubt.
And
what do those guys do? Win Super Bowls.
Like, okay, you have, let's look at the Eagles have Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, and Jahan Dotson. You think Steve Largent's breaking in that rotation? He's going to catch a few 8-yard balls from Jalen Hurts. He's not even a starter in today's NFL, let alone the greatest receiver. And that's who you're going to go with? And then, by the way, Randy Moss had 23 touchdowns in 2007 after the rule change. So I don't even know about that one. And Jerry Rice was with Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. You put Jerry Rice on another team and we'll see.
No, absolutely not. I refuse to do the system thing with Jerry.
I'd take Marvin Harrison Jr. over Marvin Harrison Sr. 10 times out of 10. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a better receiver than Marvin Harrison. I watched Marvin Harrison. Yeah, he was catching the balls for Peyton Manning. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to make quarterbacks awesome the other way around in Indianapolis.
No, I have to have Randy Moss because he was drafted in the 90s, so I get him in this. And let's see about Marvin Harrison Jr. Let's see about it. Okay?
Let's see him be awesome is what we're going to see, Maggie.
Okay, that's
fine. I know
fine.
Enough about Marvin Harrison Jr. to know that guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm ready to go.
All right. There you go. I'm giving you great names here. And I don't know why you're denigrating them.
You give me two great names. You're giving me Moss and Rice.
Chris Carter is not great?
No. Chris Carter would not be special anymore. He's good. Really good. But first of all, his career is pretty up and down. Chris Carter wouldn't be super fast and awesome right now. He'd be really, really good. But I don't think he'd be as dominant.
Michael Irvin wouldn't be great.
Irvin'd be slow.
Lynn Swann wouldn't be great.
Lynn Swann Manny had almost as many catches, Manny's dancer, as Lynn Swann. Lynn Swann caught like 64 balls his entire NFL career.
Tim Brown, who caught passes from like 22 different quarterbacks and still made it to the Hall of Fame?
I'm not ripping these guys. They're all coming on the show. But I mean, honestly, you tell me you could have a time machine and you put George Pickens, who's not even top 20, you put him into 1988, people be like, what is this guy all about? Let's throw it to him 100 times a game.
He'd be so worried about his Instagram. I don't know if he'd even make it to the game.
just throw the ball in the air and he's going to catch it with one hand. I mean,
out of bounds.
I love Chris Collinsworth as a broadcaster, but is he going to be a Pro Bowler in today's game? I just don't know.
I didn't have Collinsworth on there, but I'll take the Jerry Rices. I'll take the Randy Mosses, Sterling Sharp before his back injury. Give me Chris Carter. Give me Marvin Harrison Sr. Give me Steve Largent. I'm going to battle with these
guys. Would you at least give me physically the guys you're describing? probably do not profile athletically like the guys I'm talking about.
You know,
Chris Carter,
listen.
Tim Brown. I mean, we're talking about, you're naming like the who's who of possession receivers. I don't know. The combination of burner and being able to catch was pretty rare back in the day. You had Randy Moss, you had Rice, but not, it felt like back in the day you could either go for possession or you could go long. Now all the receivers can do both.
Well, you couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. How you know, of course, guys are going to be more possession receivers, and the run game was still more of the focus for a lot of these teams, and so you're getting limited amount of action. I just think that it's the kind of argument too where, like, you're telling me that I couldn't put any of the guys I named for the old school and put them in today's game, and they wouldn't be able to.
No,
have the same skill set. Sure hands are sure hands, whether you're possession receiver or not. Also, since when is being possession receiver a bad thing? Like, you're talking like this is, you know, you only catches only count if you make them with one hand, like Odell Beckham. Like,
being
that's
like setting up a girl because saying a setup has a nice personality. Nobody possession receiver is definitely a bad thing. That's the game manager, a wide receiver. This is 2024. You're not going to get a possession receiver. You need a guy who's going to take the top off the defense. Okay. Everything, you're making a lot of valid points. And of course, I'm being a bit tongue in cheek. Obviously, Chris Carter would be great today. But you have to admit, wide receivers are definitely faster. There is no way. I mean, look at Xavier Worthy just ran a 4.2.
Is he going to be good, though? Ross is?
Yes, probably.
He might be great. But sometimes the speed doesn't always mean they're going to be awesome.
Wide receivers are faster, taller. I don't know about stronger. But I think they are better catchers now. I honestly think the catch rates are higher. So I think physically, I think they're trained differently. Honestly, I am taking the advantage of training. I just think they're better now. They really, it's a totally different game. Now guys make catches, routine catches, that 30 years ago were not routine by any means. And even T.O. would drop a million balls. I love T.O. I think he's one of the great players. I just think guys are better now. They're just better players. And that's also one of the reasons they're getting paid so much. I mean, we're talking about CeeDee Lamb starting off the show. Like, CeeDee Lamb does everything. He's the entire offense.
But here's the thing. You can take way more chances now if you're a wide receiver quarterback combination throwing down the field because you know you are maybe most likely getting bailed out with a flag, too. So it's not just the way that the game's played, but also the way the game's officiated. We're doing old school versus new school, old school wide receivers versus new school wide receivers. Just chucking the ball up. And, you know, you can't touch anybody anymore. So that ends up becoming a good play that obviously, you know, doesn't add into the stats, but it definitely keeps drives alive. It keeps the offense on the field. All of that changes how, you know, wide receivers look and seem and how important they are to the offense because you're getting a flag if you get breathed on.
I also think, and maybe it's the same kind of argument a bit, but guys are now actually catching footballs in amateur football. Like, There were no pass plays until the guys in Texas. There were no pass plays in high school football until about the year 1995.
Yeah, right.
Now all of a sudden, and there was no 7-on-7. None of those guys you mentioned played 7-on-7. So there was just so many more reps. Like, guys are coming to the NFL having caught 1,000 passes. Where I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'll bet you I'll throw it at it. James Lofton probably caught 32 balls his junior year of college. Like, it's just a different ballgame now. So all those reps have made the guys better. Just watch it. It's not even like a guy jumps up and at the top of his jump catches the ball with one hand anywhere. Like, it could be Mike Gesicki, for God's sake. And nobody even blinks because I'm just saying, like, wide receivers are so good now, we take it for granted. I admit they have a lot of systematic advantages now, but to say that the old school guys, except for the two guys you mentioned, Rice and Moss, except for them, the talent level is at a different stratosphere now.
Curious where the audience goes on this one at 855-212-4227.
Give me the old school running backs, by the way.
We'll do that next week.
There's no argument there. That we can't even do because anybody who takes the new school running backs, I'd rather have a platoon guy than a guy who's going to run for 1,800 yards. But no, I think this is one position. I love going. We're flipping, Maggie. Usually I'm old school.
Isn't this crazy that the last 2 weeks I've been more about old school coaches and old school wide receivers and you've been about new school coaching and new school wide receivers? We're doing this role reversal thing and it's really how we feel. Can I just say, though, I need the big Steve Largent and Jerry Rice fans to come out and help me with this poll at Maggie and Pearl on X, because when I tell you I'm getting snowed, I'd love to blame it on the fact that I'm in the home studio, tested positive for COVID, so now I'm going to be in New Jersey for the rest of the week. I'm getting snowed on these polls. I don't know how I'm losing these badly.
Yeah, you just said Kenneth Walker is the fourth most impactful non-quarterback in the league. I don't know how you're losing these either.
He was an also receiving votes. He didn't make it on the list.
It's James Cook. Sorry.
Yes.
That's even crazier. Actually, Kenneth Walker I put above James Cook. You have Josh Allen at quarterback. What the? Anyway. All right, Maggie, I feel like I'm picking on you because the COVID fog is affecting your list-making ability.
I think I'm making salient points here. And the biggest one was, too, that I got really snowed on yesterday. I lost in a landslide. Is the name Ernest a tough guy name? How did I lose that poll by so much? And would you rather, which situation is worth to be months at the International Space Station or stuck in an elevator for hours? This one wasn't that bad. I only lost 55% to 45%, but still.
Wow. Which one was worse?
I said it'd be worse to be stuck in the elevator. At least the International Space Station, like, I'm trained for this. I've got entertainment. I've got food. I've got bathrooms. I've got air conditioning. I'm living a life in the International Space Station. I'm stuck in an elevator like the Chargers were for 2.5 hours with 12 people, no air conditioning. Guys were taking their shirts off because they're dripping with sweat. That is not a way to live.
I had to live through that take yesterday, so I do not want to go back to that. You were so excited about what life is like on the International Space Station, which was actually interesting to me. You're like, yeah, they have DirecTV. I can watch the new season of Emily in Paris. All right, we need to take a break. You can weigh in, 855-212-4227. Which are better, old school wide receivers, the tough guys who had to battle off the line, or new school wide receivers, the thrillingly fast guys who catch everything? Give us a call, weigh in, maybe defend Maggie on the polls, vote at Maggie and Pearl. Or you can vote for me like you did yesterday. all that and much more right here on the Maggie and Perloff Show. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. Old school versus new school wide receivers. Maggie has old school wide receivers. Jerry Rice. She didn't even really go old school. You could have gone with Fred Biletnikoff. Don Hutson. That guy put up huge numbers in Green Bay back in the day.
About going with the all 1930s team, but I thought you'd be able to poke holes in that one pretty quickly.
Peter King always says Don Hutson's the greatest receiver ever. I've heard that argument a million times. Yeah. But you can weigh in yourself, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Andy in Wichita. Andy, you go to old school or new school at wide receiver?
It's old school, Perloff. You are so off here.
What?
I mean, you just said Irving was too slow. What was his 40 time compared to CeeDee Lamb's? They both ran 4.5s.
Did Irving run a 4.5? I'm surprised by that.
Yeah.
At the combine, you have an official. Like, was that like Gil Brandt with his stopwatch, or was that actually computer timed?
Hey, that's a Google number just for record, okay?
I got 4.52 for Michael Irvin on the old Google machine.
And CeeDee Lamb was 4.51.
CeeDee Lamb's much bigger than Michael Irvin.
No, he's not. They're both 6'2", 200 pounds.
CeeDee Lamb's only 6'2"? He looks taller.
Pearl.
Could you imagine what these old guys would do coming across the middle not worried about getting their heads ripped off?
Yeah, that's another part. That's a great point. You can't draw flags for getting, you know, breathed on 40 yards down the field, which the guys can now. And it's a great point. You know, going over the middle used to be something that took guts, lots of guts. Now, I'm not saying guys, like, aren't tough today, but it's just a totally different calculus. You could get decapitated out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to Google a little bit here. Michael Irvin might have said he ran a 4.52 and 6.2, but that was back before they had cameras. Okay. I'm not sure about these measurables. I've been around Michael Irvin, and I've seen CeeDee Lamb in person. You're telling me those guys are the same size? I am not totally believing it.
Okay, but here's the thing. This is the thing about Perloff. He won't believe the combine runs from back in the day, and he doesn't believe them now. Because you think the inside track makes them faster. You question every combine time of the current guys. So if you're going to just throw out the times then.
Well, I mean, I watch football. Obviously, the receivers are faster today than when I was a kid. I mean, except for like the speedsters like Henry Eller. Like, yeah, it was just physically, they just don't look the same. I'm sorry, they're bigger, stronger, taller, faster.
Well, maybe not taller.
Well, some of them are really tall. There wasn't, like, Harold Carmichael when I was a kid was like a freak. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's 6'7". He's the tallest receiver in the history of the planet. I just think physically, Steve Largent, you said Steve Largent. Steve Largent is the same size as Andrew Bogus, who was sitting next to me to the left.
Listen, I think a lot of guys now, the bigger guys, just put on weight, become a tight end. So,
I don't know. I look at Marvin Harrison. I mean, wow. And by the way, the shorter guys are just physical phenoms. Malik Nabers, I can't believe that guy. That guy is crazy big. They're also AJ Brown is gigantic. I mean, he's not tall. I just think physically they're way better. And all football players are, to be fair, Maggie, on your side. Like, obviously, football is a much bigger, stronger, faster sport than it was in 1990. It's just the reality of the situation. All right, Bogus, headlines. What do you got?
It feels like you're yelling at me.
Yes, because you're not backing me enough on this one.
James, I'm not even listening. James Cook's importance to the Bills grew this morning with the team releasing backup QB Ben DiNucci so that Josh Allen's safety net is even thinner right now. Meanwhile, older brother Dalvin scheduled to work out for the Cowboys later today. He did next to nothing for the Jets last season, but Dalvin has since had shoulder surgery, is fully recovered from that, and apparently feeling as well as he has in years.
You guys see the pictures of Dalvin Cook, by the way?
I saw a video of him throwing a medicine ball against the wall.
He looks like an action figure. What is happening? Yeah. Unless he's always looked like that. I've never seen him shirtless. He looks so muscular. For what it's worth, I don't know if that's going to mean anything.
I mean, it was an impressive workout video.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like Perloff and getting after it back in the gym in the days.
I was going to say, did you like, man, he stole my workout routine again. Sheesh, Dalvin.
Is that what Ernest Pendleton looks like in your nightmares right now?
Ernest Pendleton was built like that. He was crazy. He looked a lot like that with his shirt off. Imagine that guy hitting you in the shoulder. Although Dalvin Cook's pretty short. I think I could take Dalvin Cook.
Oh, that, you can't.
The reach isn't an issue for you? For Dalvin Cook?
I don't know. I saw running backs don't scare me. They're very tiny. I saw Le'Veon Bell in the boxing ring. He wasn't too tough.
I saw Thomas Jones in person once, and I could not fathom him angrily running at me.
No, Thomas Jones, that's a guy you stay away from. That whole team, wasn't he with David Boston?
Yeah, it's true.
We should mention Ernest Pendleton was Perloff's high school bully. So people are wondering, who really are we talking about?
No. Tom Kier was my ultimate high school bully. You say Tom Kier to anyone who grew up in suburban Philly in the late 80s, early 90s, and like fear would just come across their face.
Who is he, Biff?
He was two Biffs together in one. Actually, he was probably a nice guy, but he was so scary. It was like a movie. You ever seen? It's a little like 3 o'clock High, where there was a bully, Buddy Revelle or something. Anyway,
Darren
like
Revelle.
Every movie bully in one person.
Sorry, your voice is cracking.
Yeah, he's
still scared.
Maggie, is there any chance that either one of these guys is as physically imposing as Perloff says they are?
We often have a guest on the show named Ani Bose, who runs a schedule for the NFL. Mm-hmm. We'll have Ani on to confirm. Yes, Ernest Pendleton looked like Dalvin Cook. He was totally jacked. Wait, why are you not believing that? He was.
Can we get Ani on tomorrow? Like, I want to like corroborate this.
I just see if Ani can come on right now. I assume the NFL, maybe he's getting his last vacation. It's August 27th. I'm going to text him right now. Okay, go ahead, Bogus.
All right. Niners left tackle Trent Williams will reportedly continue his holdout until his contract is adjusted. And the NFLPA has vetoed a proposed change to the emergency quarterback rule. Owners wanted teams to be able to call up a third QB from the practice squad every week, but the union thinks that would allow teams to hide players on that practice squad, saving money. So the setup remained like this. Teams can have an emergency third QB who does not count towards the 48-player game day roster as long as he's on the 53-man active roster. The difference between the veteran's minimum salary on that full roster and the practice squad is at least hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's what the union is preventing the teams from saving. And then we get to high school football, which began last week all around the country, I believe. Last Thursday was the Santa Ana Bowl between Mater Dei and Corona Centennial. And this was the PA announcer.
Turn around. Yeah. Pass intended for number 11, Tyler George. Incomplete. Penalty markers down. Turn around, you dumb. Read his eyes.
Oof.
Oh, calling a 16-year-old a dumb. It's kind of redundant. Maybe it's more hat. That was it.
So all the negative stuff over the PA system, but it was on the live stream of the game, which had over 1,000 viewers at that moment. So there were a handful of social media posts about this dude ripping a 16-year-old defensive back in high school football.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, so what did make it over the PA? Did any of the curse words make it, or
no,
just the live stream?
No, he was at least smart enough to turn his mic off. So
okay.
The crowd only heard pass incomplete, flag on the play. The press box and the live stream heard everything else. The turnaround, you bleep. I shouldn't call him a bleep. It's more like this bleep. That was internet only.
The redundant. That is a heck of a thing to say. Also, Modern Day is a very famous program,
yeah,
right? A lot
fancy.
Of USC quarterbacks came out of there. Yeah, right.
All I know is Peter Schwartz, our official PA announcer, would never, ever do something like that.
Way more buttoned up, way more professional. Peter Schwartz, only positive, would never say something like that.
Probably not.
I don't think.
This has got to be this guy's last PA announcement game, right? I mean, I know I'm not usually in the business of just firing everybody, but high school kids calling them dumb A's. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like this is probably the line, I feel like.
Also, isn't a volunteer position, most likely. I mean, I can't imagine this guy's,
Yeah, maybe he's getting like $50 to cover like gas and a meal, but that's about it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Listen, as somebody, we all talk into microphones for a living. Hot mics are definitely a real work hazard for all of us here. So we should be a little bit more empathetic, but it's high school kids.
Oof. And I thought for a second he realized his mistake, but no, he was just choosing a better curse word for the 16-year-old kid.
An A-hat.
Right.
Wait, what's that, Manny? You think Bogus is up to his hair? Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I'll try and make a move. Oh, am I on? I'm sorry.
That was hilarious.
You got me. No, I'm kidding. This update is perfectly adequate.
Perloff's the best actor we have.
Mean PA number two, played by Andrew Perloff.
By the way, I'm more likely but not to have my hot mic on because I barely get my on button on in time to speak most of the time. But like hot mic, would that
you have the opposite problem. You're the co-host of the show with your mic off all the time. You realize that Andrew Bogish and Jake Bogish should team up together to find Ernest Pendleton and the other guy you just named.
Tom Kier.
Perloff's two high school bullies. The next time that you talk about Jake's Little League team or Bogus's updates, I just want Ernest Pendleton and Tom Cryer to walk in with the Stone Cold music, just the breaking glass, just to start punching Perloff in the arm over and over again.
Oh, Maggie, imagine doing the show. You're on one side, Pearl's on the other, and Ernest is in between you guys just waiting to have to punch Perloff in the shoulder for something.
No, he destroyed me.
Your arm would be broken.
I wish it was two high school boys, by the way. We could have a Royal Rumble in here with the number of high school boys. I have about 14 more names that I'm debating whether to share right now.
Where did you go to school?
I just went to the most normal suburban public high school.
I don't know. It sounds like Compton High.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, the bullying, you guys didn't get bullied in high school?
No.
I mean, Kobe Bryant went there. He was probably dishing out some punches, I would imagine. Kobe.
No, I miss Kobe. Kobe was there with my brother. Kobe was the nicest high schooler of all time. I met him many times in high school. He would never bully anyone. Until he got to the NBA.
But Ernest.
Ask Smush Parker about that.
Basketball players never bullied anyone in high school. Like, that's not a position. Like, football, it was part of the football team. It's like, hey, I'm a tough football player. I'm going to go punch a skinny nerd freshman.
It's like you were in Dangerous Minds. Was Michelle Pfeiffer your teacher?
They were mild bullying. Like, just like, hey, you know what?
Here's a shank.
Just walking along, I'm going to flick that guy one time and make him double over and drop his books. Not that that happened to me six times.
Before first period. I think this is a fun question. Like, not to make light of it, because obviously there's some really serious stuff, but what are the more lighter hazing? Is it the suburban schools or the city schools? Because I think the suburban schools, no one was safe, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I went to a suburban school. EJ, you kind of went, but EJ, did you go to a city school?
Catholic school, though.
You went to a Catholic school.
Yeah, with a Catholic school in Queens, but in a more suburban area of Queens. So it's
kind of
like
mandatory weird, bullying
some,
there.
Some mix. It's like that was an interesting experience because you had kids from like the city and you had kids from like Long Island. So it was like, you know,
what a great
all
combo.
Hell broke loose. Yeah. Some, you got a little bit of everything, a big poo-poo platter.
There was a big bullying. There was a big fight at my, I'm not going to get into too many specifics here, but at my daughter's middle school, and it made the New York Post, a local paper. And it was apparently people put it on video and it got out, and I pull up the paper and I'm like, gosh, that looks like my daughter standing right there. And this is anyway, Lucy's like, oh yeah, I was walking by when that happened. It was no big deal. She wasn't in the fight or had nothing to do with it, but she was standing right there like, now what happens with bullying is it all goes into TikTok, and that's where the real, or sorry, Snapchat, and that's where the real bullying happens. Any little thing can get blown up in social. Manny, you're shaking your head. Like, you know, like social is where we have to worry about, not actual physical beating up anymore.
Well, I mean, it sounds like fighting your bully seems to be a foreign concept to you guys. I mean, the fighting was pretty often where I went to high school. So, I mean, it's really nothing. Bullying and fighting, standing up for yourself, was kind of the norm where I went to school.
We had fights. We had fights galore. They weren't dangerous, though. That was one thing. Maybe I'm...
Oh, they weren't dangerous when I went to school there, but since I've graduated, the fights in my school have turned deadly, unfortunately. But I digress.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I also think there's a difference between, like, a couple fights in the parking lot or on the bus, I think, is a little different than the hazing. Like, the hazing, right, where it feels a little systemic, or you can get really weird and sad and tragic and all that stuff, as opposed to, like, two guys fighting over a girl and they decide to throw a couple punches.
I don't know. So you went to high school in Binghamton, Maggie. Were there some epic fights? I bet you there were.
Yeah, and I remember like the lead up all day, like so-and-so, and they're going to fight, and everyone meet in the parking lot after. It was like something out of like a movie. Yeah.
But I feel like this is nostalgia. It usually ended up being okay. Now it feels a little scary. We are way off track. It's
you guys should have gone to my nerdy small school where no one was capable of bullying. That was a safe place.
Wait, how big was your graduating class?
Like 120. Because I play club floor hockey at Fordham. Yeah.
So, 120, how did you even field sports teams?
There was enough for, like, basketball, baseball, soccer, but nothing bigger than that.
The same
no football.
35 dudes just played.
I mean, kind of. Kind of.
Yeah, because that's like 60 men, 60 boys.
Yeah.
Wow.
No. It was all boys.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Hey, ain't no Ernest Pendleton chasing me in my dreams. So far, so good.
By the way, I hope we're not getting the show sued. I think we need to change the direction of naming out specific people in case I misremember.
Or they come find you.
All right. Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen.
Bogus.
That's Andrew Perloff saying all that.
DM me for your current address.
No one else has named any names.
All right. You know who's not a bully? Jerry Jones. We got to get back into the Cowboys next with a guest who knows Jerry better than anyone. It's Calvin Watkins from Dallas Morning News. That's next right here, Maggie and Perloff. This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. All right, big news today. Dallas Cowboys extend receiver CeeDee Lamb. There's so much going on in Dallas. We want to talk to somebody who is inside, covers the Dallas Cowboys for Dallas News. Of course, Calvin Watkins. Calvin, you wrote that this is a good deal. At least that's how I perceived it. It's a good deal for the Cowboys, the way they handled the CeeDee Lamb. Like, it kind of had to go this way. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct. They needed CeeDee Lamb. He's the best offensive weapon, and you don't let talented people hang out like this, hang out to dry. You got to pay him. You got to take care of him. He's an elite receiver. You could debate if he's better than Jefferson or Chase or Tyreek Hill. You know, we could have that debate, take 6 hours to finish that debate. But he's in the conversation, and so you got to pay him.
You know, Calvin, you know, I think the Cowboys might want to take some victory laps about getting this done before the season starts, but why couldn't this have happened earlier? You know, why couldn't they have gotten this done before Ja'Marr Chase signed his contract or before Tyreek Hill got a raise or anything that may have impacted the number?
I think the biggest thing they were looking at was Justin Jefferson of the Vikings.
Yeah, I meant Jefferson, sorry.
Yeah, no. You're right. once Jefferson got his deal done in June, then you knew what the market was for the top end, right? This is $35 million a year on average salary. So it's all a matter of just giving CD what he wants, right, in a sense. And CD has told the team, I don't want more than Jefferson. I don't want to be the highest paid non-quarterback. So knowing that, then you should have said, okay, I agree with you 1,000%. They should have got this done sooner. But Jerry Jones pays people when he wants to pay people, and that's why the Cowboys have not won a Super Bowl since 1995 season.
Oh, do you think that's the reason that we're sort of stuck at this level with the Cowboys? Is it something Jerry's doing with the way he's structuring the team?
It's not so much the structure of the team financially, because CD's going to be there week one for the Browns. It's just a mindset. You know what CD needs to get him in the building. So give it to him. You know, why are we playing these games? You know, like I asked Jerry at training camp, is there a sense of urgency to get CD in here? No. Well, why not? And he said, because. And he couldn't really give us an answer. You know, and then he said, well, he doesn't need to be practicing out here in training camp. I don't want him to get hurt in camp. Okay, well, he can get hurt in week one of the regular season. You know, so it's just that mindset that has to change. I don't know if it ever will change with the Cowboys, but this is where they are.
Calvin Watkins joining us, Dallas Morning News, covers the Cowboys, knows this team inside and out. So Jerry is doubling down. I'm sure you saw the interview he gave to Clarence Hill about, no one's better to do this than me. I'm the guy. I still feel sharp, and I've got so much institutional knowledge. I'm the one who says when this all goes down. How should Cowboy fans feel about that, Calvin?
Well, Jerry's not going anywhere. I think fans need to accept that. If any fan thinks that, oh, he needs to go somewhere, well, you're not paying attention. Is he watching game tape? No, he's not watching game tape. Is he involved in the day-to-day operations of the team? No, he's not. That's Stephen Jones and Will McClay. And yes, Jerry does have the title of owner, general manager, but as Jerry likes to point out, every owner in the National Football League has the right to veto anything that's done to their franchise. Why? Because they own the team. So in Jerry's mind, all the owners are GMs because they can stop. They can stop you from doing anything you want. Why? Because they own the team. And you can say, well, that's a flawed way of thinking. Well, okay, that's fine, but look where the Cowboys are. Jerry's in the Hall of Fame, one of the most valued franchises in North America. You know, they won 3 Super Bowls. So he is doing something right. It's just of late, I would say, in the last 20 years, it hasn't worked out for him in terms of getting a championship.
Calvin, what do you expect to happen moving forward with Dak Prescott?
That's a good question. I would think that they would try to get Dak Prescott done in the next 2 weeks, meaning this week and next week. If not, I'm not sure if it will get done, and he might enter offseason as an unrestricted free agent, which is a massive gamble to take with Dak Prescott. But I do believe that they will get the deal done. The first step was to get CeeDee Lamb out the way, and they've done that. So now they have to take care of Dak Prescott. And they're in the same situation as they were in with CeeDee Lamb. You know what the market is at quarterback, right? It's at least $200 million plus total package, whether it's in 4 years or 5 years. So you know what those numbers are. It's $55 million on the average salary at the elite level, in a sense. So pay the man. But if you don't want to pay him, then that's okay. You can let him walk when the season ends. But you just gave an elite receiver big money, so you better have a quarterback to throw him the ball. So I do believe that at some point in the next 2 weeks, they'll sign Dak Prescott.
What do you think's the biggest holdup? Do you think it's money or years? What is prohibiting this Dak Prescott contract? Because you're right, the market's the market. We all see what it is. What do you think's the holdup?
I think part of it was they were trying to get CD done first, so they got that taken care of. And now it's just about, you know, I think Jerry has some trepidation about Dak Prescott. Because as much as they paid CD Lamb, and they've already given Dak money before. They haven't won a lot with these guys. You know, they have not won a lot. So I think there's some trepidation there because you're saying, I'm gonna pay Dak $200 million. I'm paying CD $38 million in signing bonus. I'm gonna give him $34 million in average salary. And then Micah Parsons is gonna come to the table. He's gonna get a big money contract. but you haven't won anything with them. So I think there's some trepidation with Jerry in regards to Dak. But in terms of the holdup, I think it was getting CeeDee Lamb first, and now it's about just coming to terms with Dak. Dak, the first time we got the contract was a 4-year deal, so I'm wondering if Dak wants a 5-year deal just to, so he could say, I'll finish my career with the Cowboys.
Calvin, what's the level of optimism in Dallas? I know the win total dipped a little bit coming into this season. Are people expecting big things this year?
This is one of the first times in a while, and I've been covering the team for 15 years, where the fans have really been frustrated with Jerry and the direction. Last year, a lot of fans thought they would go to the Super Bowl, and there was a lot of expectations. This year, things have been tempered. I think fans are like, okay, we get to the playoffs, but what are you going to do there? You know, so there's a lot of here we go again kind of feeling around the team. The attendance was down at Cowboys training camp this summer. There wasn't a lot of buzz around the team, you know, from me being around it as long as I've been. So I think the fans are a little frustrated. There's some apathy has fallen around the organization a little bit from a fan standpoint. So I think the fans are like, get to the playoffs, but you better do something. If not, it's the same old, same old. And I think this is the first time that the front office, meaning Jerry and Stephen Jones, are acknowledging fans' frustration.
Calvin Watkins is joining us. He covers the Dallas Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News, does a great job. So Perloff and I had this argument earlier today, Calvin. It was about, you know, how much of the some of the things with the Cowboys are self-inflicted, right? And how much is the media just, you know, covering the Cowboys and being so infatuated with the Cowboys because the fan base is so spread out. But to me, going into the season with your quarterback and your head coach and the final year of their deal, that's like a self-inflicted wound, right? That's something that could have been mitigated. It might be with Dak, but with Mike McCarthy, you could tack on a dummy year just to make this not a story, and the Cowboys are not choosing to do that. Is this going to be something that follows the Cowboys and is a distraction throughout the season?
The Cowboys have done business like this before. Jason Garrett coached in the final year of his deal, and he made the playoffs a couple years ago. So to Jerry, it's not a big deal. And when you ask Jerry about that and say, why didn't you give Mike that, as you said, that quote-unquote phantom extension, Jerry says Green Bay, meaning Mike McCarthy could have had his extension and he had lost to Green Bay last year in the playoffs. So this is on Mike McCarthy. So you want your extension, you want to get paid again, get us to the NFC Championship game, get us to the Super Bowl. And I'm okay with that. You know, it is what it is. You know, Mike has won the Super Bowl. He came in. He was touted to be something different from Jason Garrett. So, and you've won 12 games the last 3 seasons, but it don't mean anything because the ultimate goal is to get to the final game of the NFL season, and that's something he has not been able to do. So while some would say, well, why would you want a lame duck coach? Players are lame duck every year, so why not the coaches?
Calvin, we're out of time. We really appreciate it. Love to talk to you during the season. Always interesting in Dallas. Thank you so much for the time.
You got to stay out of trouble. Thank you.
That's Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. Wow. There's just a lot going on in Dallas, as always. All right, coming up, The Athletic has their annual quarterback rankings. Maggie, I think it's fair to say there's a surprising snub for the top tier. We're going to dive into that with The Athletic's Mike Sando. I know, Maggie, you weren't happy with this ranking. We'll see how Mike explains it. That's next, right here on Maggie and Perloff. And also, we'll find out where Jalen Hurts is. That's the most important issue. Come up next.